You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. You follow Jack Winter, Golden State Warriors beat reporter for Clutch Points on Twitter at Armstrong Winter. You can follow me, Cyrus Sotsis, on Twitter at Dog Surf Roadshow. I wanted to extend this to a part two because Stephen Curry, I feel like, is almost just a show in itself. And there's a snippet out there from famed podcast host Bill Simmons. And I really feel the desire to play this for the show. I normally would not play Bill, given he's, I guess, competition, a rival. He also blocked me on Twitter because I have an issue with him pertaining to my colleague and friend Rick Barry, where Bill Simmons flat out slandered him, like, or libeled him, I guess you can say. It was in his book, where he just lied. He just literally made up what was just a rumor perpetuated by Al McCoy, the play-by-play voice of the Phoenix Suns, still doing it. He's almost 90 years old. And Al McCoy started this rumor that Rick Barry just gave up on his team in the second half of the 1976 Western Conference Finals. Not true at all. And that, so Bill ran this as fact, has never once tried to interview Rick or talk to Rick about it. They've never, ever crossed paths. And so Rick has a beef. I don't blame him. I called Bill out for it and Bill blocked me. But nonetheless, he's still a very entertaining podcast host. And he opined on the Golden State Warriors and more specifically on Steph. And he called out the front office of the Golden State Warriors for not helping Steph enough this year. Let's listen real quick first to what Bill had to say.
Like that. You didn't hear him say a peep about the fact that they did jack for him this year, right? Think about, like, if LeBron was scoring 35 a game for the Lakers and they had all these young guys on the team, and we've seen LeBron just completely turn on young guys or be like, get this fucking guy out of here. Can you imagine LeBron just being like, oh yeah, ho-hum, 35 and 33, and none of our young guys can help me? I'm pretty sure he probably would have pushed for some trades, and maybe that's one of the many differences between them, and maybe that's not even a bad thing. But for Curry, he stays out of it and he lets the chips fall where they may. And he trusts that the Warriors are going to do right by him. And that's my point with that.
But that was Bill Simmons. And the premise again, and it was interesting in the sense that he brought up LeBron, right? And I just didn't really hit me until I heard that, you know, LeBron typically hates playing with young players, right? I mean, he didn't want to play with Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
He played with the Lakers and that the young players of Ball, Brandon Ingram. I can't remember if what's his name, who's with the Knicks now, Julius Randle, was he there too for that?
I don't believe he was, no.
Okay, so yeah. But nonetheless, the point is, LeBron, he just wants veterans. He just wants to win championships. And while he clearly has his fingerprint on nearly every roster that he plays with, Steph is Steph. You know, he's chill. He doesn't cause a fuss. He's not dramatic. You know, he mostly just rolls with the players the team gives him, although we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But I guess, Jack, I wanted to have a discussion about this. Like, in your opinion, I mean, the trade deadline came and went, and the Warriors decided we're going to get Gary Payton II back, which I thought was awesome until we found out he was hurt. And on top of that, you had to give up your former number two pick from just 3 years ago, which also begs the question, is there any accountability for the fact that you literally just swung and missed big time with the number two pick in the draft? And all you got back was a player you could have already had on your roster from a year ago. Do you agree with the sentiment that the Golden State Warriors have been letting Stephen Curry down this year? Your thoughts?
I don't know if they've been letting him down this year. I do agree with the notion that it was more going into last year, right? I don't blame the Warriors for largely staying the course after winning the title and kind of, you know, committing to those two timelines that Joe Lacob recently swore never existed. he swore it. It was apparently something created by the fans and the media. So I get why you kind of, you know, run it back to the extent you can. Obviously, they didn't want to pay Gary Payton II because they worried about the luxury tax and, you know, say what you want about that. Joe Lacob's a billionaire. Would have been nice to have Otto Porter back, but then again, Otto Porter has been, he's been sidelined all year in Toronto. He's not made any impact there whatsoever. The Warriors might have caught lightning in a bottle there with him last season, staying healthy and being, contributing to the extent he did. But for me, if the Warriors let Steph down in terms of committing so hard to Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody, it was going into last season when they had Wiseman coming off a rookie year that, was not great, but at least he still had more promise than he did after last season, or, when they traded him for pennies on the dollar here at the trade deadline. Maybe they could have traded him going into last season. Maybe they could have traded the number 7 and number 13 picks for another wing. So they could really maximize Steph Curry's prime. Like, did the Warriors really believe going into last season that Steph Curry wasn't a top 5 player in the world, that he was incapable of playing at a finals MVP level? I certainly thought he was capable of that. So to me, that's why I never got the, let's try and win now while Steph Curry's in 32, 33, still a top 5 player in the world. And also, once Steph is ready to retire, then we can maybe compete for home court advantage in 5 years around Kuminga and Moody and Wiseman. That just never made any sense to me. You have Steph Curry on your team. You mentioned that he may be on basketball's Mount Rushmore the last time I was on the show.
If he wins this year.
No, sure. I mean, regardless, you could say that. He's had as big an impact on the game of basketball as any player in the NBA, as any player in NBA history in terms of how the game is played. I truly believe that. Everything that's going on with pace and space, three-point shooting, going small, all that, you can trace it right back to Steph and the 2014-15 Warriors. So in that sense, I do think that it was ridiculous for the front office to not prioritize getting Steph as much help as possible going into last season, and kind of, trying to do again the two timeline thing that Joe Lacob swore never existed. It would have been much better off if they say traded number 7 and number 13, in some salary flotsam. This is just for like an OG Anunoby, for instance. Who knows if that package was even available? I know there were some talks with him last season that he could be available. Maybe he might've been 2 years ago. For me, absolutely. I do think it's a big mistake that the Warriors didn't do everything they could to maximize Steph's prime. And, they're going to, like, as I said, Joe Lacob and Bob Myers, they're going to say that, no, we really weren't prioritizing the future. But we know they were at least peering at it for the Warriors team's post Steph. You have Steph Curry. You have Steph Curry. He's already won 3 titles before last season. What are you doing? Try and win as many as possible. That's certainly what I would have done. And that's why LeBron James every single season is saying now.
Yeah.
Make upgrades now. I want another ring. Steph doesn't take that approach. And I think a lot of people would say that's why the Warriors have been so successful over the last decade or so, because he's so much an organization, team first type of guy. But, him kind of not putting his finger on the scale, I think, has kind of come back to bite the Warriors a little bit. Not to say that it's Steph's fault. The blame is solely the front offices, but yes, I do think the Warriors have let Steph down a little bit by just looking toward the future. When they have Steph Curry on their team, he's still a top 5 player, could be the best player in the world. They need to do everything they can right now to maximize his prime.
Like last year, I interviewed Steph and I asked him, I was like, would you want reinforcements? Because part of the reason why I haven't been as vocal this year versus last year, when it comes to the Warriors needing a big, I absolutely believe that they do. And I'm going to list a few players, for example, that they could have and should have pursued. And when I asked Steph about that last year, I'm like, would you like this front office to bring in reinforcements? I think at this point in the season, Bielitsa was hurt, or he's dealing with this back injury that slowed him down considerably. I forgot there was like another. Oh, and Draymond was out too. Draymond had the back injury and he was out for 2.5 months. And Steph was, he made it as obvious as could be that he would have loved that. And then he joked and said, if you want to go ask the front office, please do so on my behalf. He was joking about it, but he also was very straightforward in that he would welcome it. But like you said, he's not a shit stirrer. He's sorry to swear again. He doesn't cause drama. It would seem very unbecoming of Stephen Curry if he made like demands, right? And that's one of the many reasons I think why people love him. In the chat, a lot of people bring up Jared Vanderbilt. I thought he would have been perfect for this team. He would have solved a lot of their offensive rebounding woes, and rebounding woes and defensive woes, and just a lot of issues would have been solved with him. There was people brought up Stanley Roberts, who I think is still available, actually, unless I'm mistaken, and someone added him, who I thought would have been good.
Stanley Johnson, you said?
Stanley Roberts. Or is it Johnson?
Talking about the four, kind of a 4-3 wing.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Who what's his last name? Now I'm like confused. Stanley Johnson. Thank you. And then just recently, Nerlens Noel was actually, I think, still available. Who at least would give you defense, who at least would give you shot blocking, who at least would give you size that this team just desperately lacks. And there's a lot of names that we can run down. Do you have an answer for why you think the team opted to not bring back Damian Lee and Juan Toscano-Anderson? Those are the two names that just make no sense to me. If I ever had a chance to interview Bob Myers, that would be one of the first questions I would ask him is, why did you not bring those two guys back? They would have come back. They would have been available for the veteran minimum. And obviously Lacob's rationale and logic is he doesn't want a repeat of what the Lakers went through. We've heard him say that before, like when the Kobe era ended, they went through for like nearly 10 years where the only attraction was Kobe, who's aging, but that was it. And Joe Lacob doesn't want a repeat of that. I understand that to a certain degree. Your thoughts on the fact that the bench this year is just cleaned out completely of veterans. And we're in this mess we're in now. We're having arguments over Anthony Lamb getting big minutes. And we're having, and meanwhile, Damian Lee's lighting it up for the Suns. And just what do you think went into the process of this bench this year?
Well, I think Damian Lee and Juan Toscano-Anderson weren't re-signed in part because, again, the Warriors' luxury tax problems. You said, yes, they're available for the veterans minimum, but the longer you play in the league, the veterans minimum is higher.
Right.
If the Warriors could fill that spot with, say, Anthony Lamb, then he's playing on an absolute minimum, right? And when you factor in how far the Warriors are into the luxury tax, that extra million could be $7 million or $8 million to Joe Lacob. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I think charitably, you could say that, the Warriors wanted to give those guys a little more opportunity to shine after they contributed to a title. Again, that's charitable. I think that's more to do with cost. I wasn't surprised that the Warriors let Gary Payton walk over the summer because of the luxury tax concerns we talked about, because the Blazers gave him a 3-year deal. Payton hasn't been the healthiest player. He obviously relies a lot on athleticism. And what you forget about him is because he took so long to kind of find his niche in the league is that he's already 28, 29. You could think that he's not going to be the same player in 2 or 3 years' time that he was last year.
Right.
Having said that, he was just instrumental to what the Dubs did last year. He was one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, switching across four positions, wreaking absolute havoc, deflections, steals, blocks, getting the Warriors out in transition. He could screen on the ball. He could even play pick and roll with Steph Curry as a screener. He was just so dynamic. Steve Kerr loves versatility. The Warriors love versatility when you play that system that they do. An intuitive, smart, disruptive player like Gary Payton II is just huge. Which is why, I wasn't surprised when he didn't have the same success in Portland that he did with the Warriors, just because he was just such a great fit for what Golden State does. We've addressed Porter. That just wasn't going to happen. Like I said, the Warriors caught lightning in a bottle there, but this would all be moot if, Kuminga has taken the step forward that we wanted this year. I think definitely he will absolutely be in the playoff rotation. I do think he'll be ahead of Anthony Lamb. He's been starting over Anthony Lamb, of course. At least Kerr hasn't gotten that crazy with Lamb. Right. Moody has been the big disappointment to me. And I mentioned this in the last show. Coming into the year, I thought he would be competing with DiVincenzo for first perimeter minutes behind Poole, and that just hasn't happened. He's shooting, I think, 33% from three.
Which isn't bad, by the way. Yeah,
it's below average for his position. Yeah. Okay. I think league average on threes now, just in general, is 35-36%.
The reason why 33% is the Mendoza line, though, as long as you're shooting 33%, from three, that's the equivalent of 50% from two. So you can't say like you're hindering your team if you're doing 33 or better.
It's all about whether teams are closing out to you or treating you like a shooter. And I think they probably are treating Moses Moody like a semi-reliable shooter anyway.
I see it. Yeah.
But you just don't, you don't see him turning the corner and pick and roll. You don't see him slipping back door in split cut actions for Steph Curry. He's just not really making an impact offensively. And then defensively, he's just kind of a guy out there to me. I'm just not exactly sure what type of palpable impact he's making on either side of the ball.
Is it fair to judge him though, given how little he plays? I mean, like, for example, the cutting thing, just last game, I saw him do three cuts in a row.
And
defensively, like, I hear some people criticize him saying he can't stay in front of people. I've never once seen that. I do not see him getting burned, being used like a traffic cone. I don't get the criticism in general, just because he barely plays. Like tonight, he played 13 minutes. Only had one measly point, but he also had zero field goal attempts.
That's a problem, though. Like, the fact that he took zero field goal attempts is a problem. Like, I thought there were a couple times tonight where the ball came his way and a defender was laying 5 to 6 feet off him, about to close out, and instead of shooting, he just immediately passed it. And you would say, and I would agree that maybe his confidence is shot because he's not playing the role that he thought he might. And I totally agree. That's something that happens with young players. But, you know, it'd be ideal if Moses Moody was able to fight through that, kind of like we saw Jonathan Kuminga fight through it at the beginning of the year, right?
With more minutes, though. But he was also getting some more run. That's the thing. This is the whole core of my issue with the Lamb Ty Jerome thing, is that if from the beginning of the season, if Moses Moody was getting 20 to 25 minutes a night, I am insanely confident that A, the Warriors would not suffer for it. They're 36 and 35. I don't think they're worst. And B, you now have a Moses Moody that has confidence, that has evolved and developed a skill set, and who could actually be contributing real minutes right now. Instead, Kerr keeps going to the players that he trusts the most, which is players who understand his system better, players who, for some reason, he has an adoration for players who play longer in college. But the end result is a 36 and 35 record. That is my core issue with the two-way guys getting minutes. And you also mentioned, by the way, like Kerr hasn't been outrageous enough to start Lamb. But to me, closing a game with a player is actually more important. And that's what invoked my emotional response to Lamb playing tonight at the closing minutes of a game where they were trailing by two. And he was largely responsible for that lead going from 2 to 6. That's why I react the way I do.
I disagree with you. We don't need to get into that. I don't think it was Lamb's fault that happened, but you know, that's fine.
But again, he got called for the foul that went from 2 to 4. And then it went from, and fine, he wasn't responsible from 4 to 6, but these are pivotal moments. Those plays carry a lot more weight when it's at the minute mark and you have a 2-point game versus the third quarter, right? I mean, so he failed in a big moment. And I just don't think Anthony Lamb should be in those big moments to begin with. That's my beef. You're right. We can agree to disagree, but I just don't understand what the justification is for a player like Anthony Lamb closing a game that you desperately need to win. Cause now there's only 11 games remaining in the season and you're about to drop in the standings. I think the Grizzlies just won, although they don't impact it. The Timberwolves just won. I gotta refresh this, my standings right now, because so the Warriors have a half game lead right now over the Timberwolves and the Dallas Mavericks right now. That's my issue, man, is I feel like if Moody was playing from the start, imagine what you would have right now. Like, Moses Moody could be at least close to Jonathan Kuminga. Instead, you have Moses Moody reacting like this when he's asked, how does it feel to have to just always be ready and not knowing when you're ever going to play?
I mean, it sucks.
He was very frank about that. Like, the question was, how does it feel not knowing when you're going to play, having to always stay ready? And this was his reaction.
I mean, it sucks.
And he's a 20-year-old kid who's getting pulled around emotionally. That's where my critique with Kerr, man. Like, I don't know how he doesn't understand that A, Moses Moody is a 6'6 player with a 7'1 wingspan who I don't mind the lack of shot attempts tonight, just because I feel like he's doing what Kerr wants, which is focusing on defense, not messing up. Like, did he have like turnovers tonight, for example? If I look at his turnover sheet, no turnovers, right? Yeah. So and I'm wondering partly if Moody's like so afraid of turnovers, because Steve Kerr always brings that up with Ty Jerome, the turnover to assist ratio, then maybe he's thinking in his head, like, okay, as long as I don't turn the ball over, I might get more minutes. You know, who knows what's going through his head? But he's 20 years old, he's a kid. I'm just really disappointed with the way he's been handled this year in general.
But I really think this whole discussion gets back to our point when he played that Simmons clip. Like, the Warriors didn't have to have these problems with the young guys. You know, they could have traded those picks. They could have just tried to keep two of their three lottery picks, or even just one of them. But instead, they had to look ahead, despite having one of the best players of all time, the most innovative player in NBA history on their team. And you know, to me, that's what really all this comes down to. And of course, the fact that they didn't have Draymond, we don't know what's going on with Wiggins, and hope everything's okay with him. Of course, Peyton, and now Andre, who, you know, it's no surprise that he's out. Unfortunately, is he 39 now?
He's done.
We could have guessed that coming into the season. You know, when he had that dunk against San Antonio and hurt his wrist or whatever it was.
Yes.
Or I guess he has a wrist now. I can't remember what that was, but you know,
he broke his wrist.
Unfortunately, the Warriors aren't going to get major minutes from Andre Iguodala at this point in his career.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, my neck, my back, my neck and my back. Oh.
Yeah, it was. I feel like, honestly, they brought him back mostly, as weird as it sounds, I feel like his value more than anything else is keeping on Draymond Green in check. He's one of the very few players on that roster who, when Draymond is getting overly emotional, that Draymond listens to, right? And kind of gets back in focus with. I don't know. That's just my read on the whole thing. But
no, yeah, I agree. I think that's why they brought Andre back as well, mostly just for the locker room and the yeah. leadership aspects. And then obviously he understands the systems as well as anybody. He could mentor Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, two younger wings. He could keep Draymond Green in check. He could challenge Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson because he was there for those four championships. He's been around longer than them. So in that sense, I think it made – you know, it makes sense, but unfortunately, it just turns out with the Warriors, with not getting development they needed from the young guys, and then just being so injury ravaged this season, they just need him to play, and of course, yeah. he's now injured too.
It just annoys me because the Warriors proved last year they can win a championship with Kuminga and Moody on your roster. For Joe Lacob to be pulling like the penny pinching card, that just sucks because I feel like that's ultimately what these roster decisions come down to. You even said it yourself, like when we go to Damian Lee and Juan Toscano-Anderson, they're veteran minimum deals as players who've been in the league a certain number of years, that veteran minimum has skyrocketed. And you multiply that number times, I think 7.5 or 8, whatever that gradient increase is that the Warriors are into in terms of luxury tax hell. So Damian Lee, that $1.5 million, $2 million is actually probably like 12, $14 million. But Joe Lacob could afford it, man. It just sucks. I got to give this ad read real quick, even though we're doing a bonus extended episode. There's even ads for that. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. Again, I know we mentioned them earlier for the live show, but if you're watching the recording, this will be the first time. And again, this world is gnarly. This world is hard. Reality can be very difficult. We barely got out of a pandemic. It's okay to seek help if you're struggling, all right? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And one of the best resources you have is BetterHelp because it's super easy. It's literally just a website away. All you got to do is go to betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. Again, this episode today is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you go to try their online therapy, betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA, and get on your way to being your best self. And for, I've experienced trauma in life. I know most people have had moments where things have just been rough. Things have just not been easy, and you can get help for that. And BetterHelp is a great resource for you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. You don't have to leave your house. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire so they know what kind of therapist works for you. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lockedonNBA.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. You can read Jack Winter's terrific content that he publishes with Clutch Points. I actually started reading your content recently, Jack. I'm sorry for getting on that train so late. You're a great writer, man. Respect. And follow Jack on Twitter, where he obviously posts all the links, right? I hope you do.
Not all of them, but some.
Well, regardless, follow him on Twitter at Armstrong Winter. I want to play the soundbite of Steve Kerr. This is from post game. Let's hear what he has to say, because I haven't heard this before. Let's see if he's going to be positive, if he's going to be negative. Let's hear Kerr's reaction to tonight's loss.
14-4 out of the gate, we looked great, and then we started turning it over, and their transition was hurting us. So that was the problem the last 8 minutes of the first quarter or so, and then we settled down after that, did a better job of handling their transition, taking care of the ball. Proud of our guys' effort. We had our chances. We had several shots in the last couple minutes to take the lead and just couldn't get anything to go, but love the effort, love the energy. These guys are fighting, and I believe in them. I believe something good's going to happen with this group. We just got to keep fighting and keep moving forward.
he believes. What your thoughts on that reaction? I it's getting old to me. Your thoughts, Jack?
Yeah, I was just reminded how disgusted Kerr was with the transition defense at multiple points throughout this game. like there was one point in the first half. It was the first half actually. Clay airballed the three. Nobody got back afterwards because Jordan Poole had driven the lane. I think Dante DiVincenzo or Jonathan Kuminga needed to rotate over and get back. Instead, nobody did. DeAndre Hunter leak out dunk. Kerr, I believe, actually pleaded with his hands walking on the court calling timeout. And then it happened again in the fourth quarter when Steph was getting his little 1 minute break there midway through the fourth quarter. The Warriors actually got a stop. They got a stop before crunch time. I believe it was Clay and JaMychal Green kind of ended up getting a stop down there down low, and Clay tried to pitch ahead to Jordan Poole and just threw it away. And instead of getting back on defense, the Warriors were sulking. Atlanta quickly inbounded the ball, and DeAndre Hunter hit a quick wing three, and Kerr called timeout to immediately bring back Looney and Steph. So the Warriors transition defense, I thought Kerr was being a little charitable there. I thought it was just awful all night. Maybe it tightened up a little bit after he expressed his disgust there in the second quarter. But there were just so many times in this game, like after makes, which is what the Warriors love to do. They love to run off makes, especially when Draymond Green is available. The Hawks were doing that to them over and over again tonight. And I really just think that was indicative of kind of the lack of focus that they came into with this game.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm looking at the box score right now. The Warriors had 17 turnovers, and it's really rough when the veterans are the ones dropping the ball. There's just nothing you can say or do. It just sucks. So, you know, because what are you going to do? Complain about Stephen Curry, one of the greatest players ever? He had 6 turnovers tonight. Klay Thompson had 6 turnovers tonight. Jordan Poole had 3, but 2 of those were in the first half, and he got those 3 turnovers in only 23 minutes of play. Jack, are you the type of person that puts weight on the plus-minus? Does it depend? What is your thought on that stat? Because it can be very subjective. Some people rely on it. Some people poop on it. Do you like plus minus?
You want a bigger sample, right? Single game plus minus can be folly. Steph Curry can have 40 points and be a -6.
Right.
right. And the Warriors win by 3. That'd be amazing because, I mean, the Warriors bench did really well, which hasn't happened all that much this year. But that is possible. And so you do need to look at certainly more than one game. And then you can't just look at total plus minus either. I think you need to get into rate plus minus, like plus minus per 100 possessions, net rating.
That
type of thing on off court. Absolutely. That really does matter. And that's one of the reasons why so many people have had hope for the Warriors this season is because, and I guess this isn't necessarily a plus minus thing, but it's a net rating thing. Their traditional starting lineup still has one of the best net ratings in the league with Clay, with Steph, with Wiggs, with Dre, with Loon.
Correct.
They're still a dominant unit, and they have been since the season tipped off. So, to the extent you want to feel good about the Warriors right now, I think you can cling to that. You can cling to the fact that, I think I mentioned it last time, the Warriors have defended at a league best level with Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green on the floor this season, no matter who is next to them. That's really important. You can look at plus minus for that. I like plus minus, but again, just for single games, it's just never an accurate indication of a player's impact.
Yeah. I just randomly look at this chat comment from Smile. God loves you. 77 saying, are you forgetting that Poole and Wiseman were meshing well? I do remember that. They were actually phenomenal pick and roll partners. That was a whole other lifetime ago. The Warriors play. This is the final back to back of the season. Jack, by the way, thank you so much for staying on for this extended show tonight.
Of course,
the Warriors, Kylan Mills will join me again tomorrow. And I'm not feeling good about this, man. It's a road game in Memphis. It's the last game against the Grizzlies. They don't have Ja Morant. They don't have Brandon Clark. They don't have Steven Adams. Yet despite that, I feel like the Warriors are going to be punished inside. You know what's weird, by the way? They won the points in the paint battle tonight. I feel like that's the second time all season they've done that. That's just off memory. That is strictly just me spitballing. Do not take that as fact. But they routinely lose that battle. They actually won the points in the paint battle tonight, 68-54. Yet despite that, they lose the game 127-119. And again, just turnovers were huge, 17 to 10. The Warriors had 17 to just 10 for the Hawks. And in terms of points off turnovers, that's where the Hawks really killed them. 21 points off those turnovers versus just 9 for the Hawks. What are you feeling for tomorrow, man? This game is – every game is obviously getting more and more important. You look at the standings right now. The Timberwolves actually – someone told me they lost. I read that in the chat. And that is correct. They lost to the Bulls. There you go. I'm looking at it right now. So in the standings – the Warriors right now have a half-game lead over both the Timberwolves and the Mavericks. They're tied in the loss column. So both those teams could get a win and tie up with them. And then the Lakers, who are playing the Mavericks right now, that's a really big game. Currently sit 1.5 games behind the Warriors. Same with the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Utah Jazz are just 2 games behind the Warriors. And even the Pelicans are still in the mix, just 2.5 games behind the Warriors. What are you feeling about tomorrow, man? I'm not feeling good about it. Your thoughts?
No, I don't know how you can feel good about it. I suppose the only silver lining could be that Memphis is also playing on the second half of a back-to-back. Then again, they played the Spurs tonight. I'm not exactly sure how it went. I haven't looked, but
no, I randomly saw that I think they were down 29 points and came back and won. So they pulled off a huge comeback.
Oh man, it must have been the Jeremy Sohan show there for a while. The Malachi Branham hour. regardless, no, I mean honestly, that's good for the Warriors, right? Like, if just looking at this from a purely Warriors perspective, you would think that Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, Tyus Jones, all those guys had to fight really hard, play big minutes to get back into that game and beat an inferior team. Unfortunately, Steph Curry played 37 minutes tonight. Klay Thompson 35. Dante played 36. Dre will be fresh. That's something. Looney 34. Like, you don't see Looney. We shouldn't end the show without talking about how awesome Kevon Looney was tonight.
Fair enough. Go for it, man. Lead the way.
He was just great. We talked about the Warriors kind of getting killed on the glass there, despite they won second chance points. He finished with 18 points, which I believe is a regular season high for his career. 18 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 blocks, 7 offensive rebounds. You saw him have multiple tip dunks tonight. I thought he did okay switching on to Trae Young even sometimes. Trae Young is just so hard to contain, certainly for bigs and switches. And then even in pick and roll, he's even more difficult to contain. We saw him hit the roller for multiple lobs tonight. That's a tough assignment for anyone. I thought Kevon did about as well as you could expect.
Yeah.
He was great tonight. So let's hope that, he can bring that same fire tomorrow, because the Warriors will definitely need it. Despite the fact that they're missing Jaw, who's just a walking paint touch, that they're missing Steven Adams, the strongest player in the league, a dominant offensive rebounder, one of the best screeners in the league, and Brandon Clark, a pogo stick, basically. The Grizzlies still dominate in the paint, and the Warriors will really, really need Kevon Looney and Draymond Green to rise to the challenge tomorrow night against what should be a tired Memphis team. So if you're feeling good about the Warriors tomorrow night, I suppose the only thing you can feel good about is that Memphis is tired as well.
Yeah, and that's, you brought up Draymond Green. That's actually, if there's one positive to him being suspended for tonight's game, he's going to be fresh and ready to go tomorrow.
Let's hope he's calm for just a little bit.
Yeah, right. And I wouldn't mind seeing some Patrick Baldwin Jr. minutes. It would be nice to see that 6'10 frame out there. At least just giving him size, man. It just gets old seeing the Warriors punished repeatedly. You can see just with your own observation skills that there are differences in size, man. It can't be easy on them. I asked a former player about a year ago, like, if they thought that made a difference. I forgot who it was, but yeah, this was a former player I asked, and they were like dumbfounded that Myers and Kerr are just okay with these small ball lineups, because they said that these guys are feeling it physically. I mean, the physical toll is got to be catching up to them at some point. So we'll see what happens. I'm not calling for Kerr being fired either. I know I'm really critical of him this year, but I'm not going to go that far. Ken Mamba asked real quick before, as we're wrapping things up here, and Jack, I love your insights on this too. Do you think playing Lester Quinones can help the team? He is on the team now officially on a 2-way deal. He might play tomorrow. Wouldn't surprise me if Ty Jerome suited up, because I think Jerome has a few more games, right, of eligibility.
I don't think he's hit 50 yet. I don't.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So he has, I don't know how many he has to go. He's getting up there, but Lester Quinones does not have that limit. I would love to see him play. Your thoughts, Jack?
Yeah, I just don't really see the minutes for him at this point in the season. Unfortunately, it might be different if it was if it was November, or if the Warriors had a cushion in the standings and it was mid-March. But as is, they need to fight like hell to stay out of the play-in tournament. And I just don't know where those minutes are coming from with Steph, Dante, Jordan Poole all healthy. Unless you want him to take Moses Moody's 10 minutes, Cyrus, and which I don't think you do.
No, I don't. No, absolutely not.
There you
go. If he takes Lamb's minutes, I'm totally cool with it. But I say this with pure honesty and genuineness, and just literally my own intuition. I think everything started going south the moment the Warriors decided to move on from Quindary Weatherspoon and replaced him and Lester Quinones all the way back in the preseason with the 2-way players they have now. The moment that happened, I just didn't like it. And the main reason I didn't like it is because they did not waive Quindary Weatherspoon because of his talent. They waived him because of ego. He publicly stated that he feels that he should be, that he should have a guaranteed deal. And they were going to give him his fourth two-way deal in a row. It would have been the last time they could have done that. And he had just expressed, you know, as a manner of him being personally confident about his skills, that he thinks he is a deserves a guaranteed deal. And the team brass did not like hearing that, and they moved on. And I just thought, as a team who's struggling mightily with perimeter defense, right, and you have Quindary Weatherspoon, whose entire ethos coming into the season was, I want to step in and replace Gary Payton II, and you just cut him because, like, he, in your minds, referring to the Warriors, whether it's Kerr or the front office, in their minds, they did not, they thought it was disrespectful that he publicly said that he deserves a guaranteed deal. And for that, they got rid of him. And the moment that happened, then we have the Draymond punch, and it's just one thing after another. Yeah, man. So that's where we are.
Draymond was so incensed about Ty Jerome getting the two-way over Quindary Weatherspoon that he punched Jordan Poole. Is that what you're suggesting, Si?
No, I'm not. But I'm saying like the snowball of just bad energy, if you will.
I'll say this. I was really surprised that the Warriors went with Jerome for that two-way spot over Weatherspoon, because I thought if the Warriors lack anything, which they did, it was perimeter defense. And few heat up the ball like Quindary Weatherspoon does. And Ty Jerome certainly doesn't do that. And, you know, Andrew Wiggins can do that. Jonathan Kuminga can do that. But beyond that, on this roster, Dante DiVincenzo has that capability at times. But beyond those guys, they just don't have anyone else who can really heat up the ball. So I did think Quindary Weatherspoon, kind of in the way Gary Payton did when he got that last spot going into last year.
Exactly.
I thought that might be a great role for him, but I guess the Warriors thought differently.
Yeah, and I'm not telling you like that I think that's what happened. I know that's what happened. I reported this last year, that is literally why they let go of him. And it's just disturbing, man. I didn't like that.
But I had not heard that. Awesome reporting from you, but that is disturbing. They should not.
Yeah, it sucks.
They should not let their egos get in the way of a player's ego. A player doesn't make it to the NBA or be on the fringes of the NBA without having ego. Gary Weatherspoon doesn't make it to the G League without thinking that he deserves a spot on a 15-man roster. That is frustrating to hear, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if this Rebel the Sounds is writing in the chat is true, that they got rid of Marquise Chris because he said the same thing, but it wouldn't surprise me. The moment I learned that, that kind of soured me with Kerr a little bit, because I don't know. I've heard a few things about Kerr and his ego, but I'll save that for another time. Maybe just not for this show. I don't know. Anyways, anything else we need to cover? I feel like we went a very long time. We're at an hour 15. My God, we did. We went long. Good stuff. Did we miss anything? Is there anything we haven't covered?
I don't think so. We gave Kevon Looney his flowers for being awesome tonight, which I'm really glad we did. I thought Dante was really good tonight, too.
Yes. Agreed. Strongly agree. Yes.
And, you know, it's unfortunately easy to take those role players for granted sometimes when they just fill in the gaps, you know, on both ends so well. And they, you know, do things other guys don't, and they fight really hard, and they're doing, you know, again, just doing all the little things. And then you look at the box score and it's like, oh, Dante had 18 points and 6 assists tonight on 6 of 13.
Right.
It was probably the Warriors' best defender on Trae Young. So again, yeah, kudos to Dante DiVincenzo and Kevon Looney for tonight's performance. Like, those guys do need more attention, but when the Warriors are struggling, it's just hard not to focus, you know, on the negatives. And, you know, and the negatives aren't Dante DiVincenzo and Kevon Looney tonight, so they aren't going to get talked about.
Yeah, DiVincenzo, 35 minutes, he scored 18 points, he had 6 assists. 3 for 9 shooting from three. Again, when we talk about the Mendoza line, 33% or better is the same as 50% from two. So I'm not complaining when a player hits that mark. I love DiVincenzo. It sucks that they're probably going to lose him after the season because of money issues. I hope that doesn't happen, but it probably will. I think, in my opinion, is it a crazy opinion you think, Jack, that I really do believe that Kevon Looney is the best rebounder in the NBA? Would you agree with that? Is that a crazy notion?
I don't know if it's a crazy notion. He's certainly up there, right? I mean, like, if his hands get on the ball, I think he's coming down with it. He's got stickum on his hands. I mean, my God. He's a great offense. He's a great offensive rebounder, great defensive rebounder. I don't know what the numbers say. I don't think he's quite up there in terms of, like, top five in terms of rebounding rate. Like, you know, Steven Adams is always up there for offensive rebounding, guys like that. But he's certainly one of the best rebounders in the league, especially lately. He's really, really been crashing glass. It seems as these games get more important, Kevon Looney is fighting even harder on the boards than he was before.
Absolutely. Never going to forget those 22 rebounds in a series clinching game in the Western Conference Finals last year.
Yeah, against Kevon Looney. Wild. Lovely. What a success story Kevon Looney is. Still going, too. Not even close to done.
Yeah, he's 27, I think, right? 26, 27. Mm-hmm. He's way younger than you think.
Overcome multiple injuries. He's just a great player, great ambassador.
Absolutely. Well, Jack, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. Long show, man. Thanks for sticking with me.
Of course.
And again, tomorrow night, we'll have a special Saturday Night Live episode with Kylan Mills following the Warriors Grizzlies. And for those of you that love Jack, if he'll come back, I'm definitely going to invite him. So hopefully we'll have some more Jack Winter. And again, you can follow his work at Clutch Points, where he covers the Golden State Warriors. You can follow Jack Winter on Twitter at Armstrong Winter. You can follow me, Cyrus Hostles, on Twitter at Dog Surf Roadshow, and this program on Twitter at Locked On Dubs. Thank you, everyone. Bummer they lost. Season's not over, though. There's still one game above 500, and they're in the sixth spot at the moment. We'll see how tomorrow goes. Good night, everyone. Jack, thanks, man.